This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Broadband Wireless Access World. We're about to speak to Bernard Etzinger, who's the embassy spokesperson at the Canadian Embassy in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Broadband Wireless Access World.
Thanks for having me.
Let me just ask you to speak up just a tad louder to make sure everybody can hear you all over.
Sure.
Why don't you start by telling us how extensive is broadband in Canada now, and who are the major providers of it there?
Sure thing. Canada is a broadband nation. We have often been called the most wired country in the world, depending on who you are listening to, but we are often listed in the top one or two, either just ahead or just behind the United States. We have also had several notations in terms of our e-government services, and many of those, of course, are evolving very rapidly in a broadband world. Canadian broadband is similar in many ways to the U.S. There's one principal difference is that our cable penetration is much higher in Canada. It is over 90%, and that has a lot to do with the fact that that you're dealing with people very concentrated in urban centers, and in the rural centers, you also have a high cable penetration simply because it's a consumer choice issue, and the old rabbit ears were something that sort of got quickly out of style in Canada. So because we have a high cable penetration and a sophisticated telephone IT system, we have broadband penetration now that is equal, if not greater than what exists in the United States.
Does the cable go out to obscure rural locations?
It can. That depends a little bit on the grid. You can get to pretty obscure in Canada. There's a lot of rural locations, as you can imagine, in the far north. So
right.
In those areas, the answer is no. But so few people live in those areas that, in fact, it doesn't affect the overall percentage too much. And in those areas where you're seeing the kind of broadband, the satellite-driven dish kind of broadband services are quite popular there as well. But Canada has an extensive program to wire all of its remote communities with broadband in one form or another, and that program is already underway.
Now, I'm going to sound pretty ignorant here. Is there a national telephone company in Canada, or is there a private company?
There used to be a long time ago, back before deregulation. It was a company called Bell Canada, so you're absolutely right about that. But through deregulation now, we have spun off into several different companies. There is a large national concern and other companies that operate some solely within the Canadian market, and then there are others, major American carriers, who also operate within the Canadian market, and they provide the wide range as well of integrated data and telephony services.
What American-based carriers are active in Canada?
AT&T is one. On some of the, see, I'm thinking of another company offhand.
None of the Arbucks, the Baby Bells, SBC, and Verizon don't operate in Canada.
No, they don't. And part of that still, there's, as you know, still some regulation left in that industry. And we also have a local phone service, and in some parts there's some regulation left in the local phone service. But that market is evolving very rapidly, as you know.
How would you divide the subscriber rates or the broadband access through cable versus DSL from telephone companies?
That's roughly about 50-50. For most Canadians, it's simply a cost and convenience issue. And for a few, it's a question of one access over the other. So cable made a very fast start on broadband access, but DSL wireless has been catching up.
Are rates comparable to what they are in the United States, given exchange rates and all?
Generally, yeah. In fact, I think it might even be a bit more economical in Canada from my own personal experience, what I've seen living in both countries.
Okay, and what about wireless? How extensively is that deployed in Canada now?
Very, very extensively. a lot of outdoor cafes in Canada, despite that in some parts of it today in Canada it's about minus 20 degrees.
Fahrenheit or centigrade?
Hanging on a keyboard outdoors in those places.
Is that 20 below Fahrenheit or centigrade?
But it's about the same once you get to that level.
Oh, okay, right.
But there is a lot of wireless. There's a lot of innovation in the industry that in fact happens in Canada, and a lot of technology partnering in firms within the two countries. And so you've got wireless hotspots, especially in urban centers, but increasingly also in the smaller cities because people want it. And apart from that, in homes, you're seeing it increasingly that people are using it because it's a very effective way, for families with kids, many people who want to access the web at the same time. And it's not uncommon if you're in an apartment building that you can see, you know, three or four or five active wireless networks apart from your own.
Now, is the wireless usually provided by cable companies, by phone companies, by independent service providers?
All of the above. All of the above. That's an open market. The ISP market in Canada is, as I was mentioning, evenly split between DSL and cable. There are a couple of major carrier providers in Canada. Folks like Rogers is one of the major ones in Canada. And the major DSL providers are the phone companies. One example of that being the Bell system. There's also smaller providers who are doing DSL, and there are some small cable operators that exist throughout Canada, similar again to the United States.
Okay, well, it sounds like there's a lot of diversity and a lot of rollout and a lot of broadband in Canada.
There is.
With all of that, has there emerged any need for the cities themselves, for Montreal, Toronto, the Prairie Capitals, any of the cities in the Maritimes, to institute Wi-Fi on a municipal basis with the city government getting involved?
That's a good question. I am not completely up to date as to where they're going at the municipal level on that. One principal difference between the Canadian and U.S. Regulatory markets is that telecommunications is regulated more nationally in Canada than it is in the United States. And so as a result, we do have things like a national broadband policy that seeks to do broadband. Now, when you get to wireless at the municipal level, there is a lot of entrepreneurship. And I think there is, from what I've seen, and personally, and again, I haven't seen any documents on any of this stuff. But what's going on in places like Toronto is a pretty Wi-Fi friendly culture, and in places like Vancouver, especially with their emphasis on the software and gaming industries that are out there, it's pretty well second nature now.
But it's not being done by city governments.
I don't think so. But on that, I'd have to defer to someone closer to the ground there.
Okay, and do you know whether the dispersal is so widespread now that one could say that there are Wi-Fi clouds covering?
That would be fair. In places like Vancouver and Toronto and Montreal, that would be fair. In other places, there might be a cloud, but they're small clouds, and so it might be hard to see from a far distance.
Yeah. Now, we've been talking about the penetration of broadband. What about the applications over it, in particular voice over IP, and how widespread has that become? Who's handling it, and is it cannibalizing or eating into market share of the phone companies?
That's possible, although I think the phone companies are getting into voice over IP, so like every other opportunity, the market is adjusting. But the upstarts have been making inroads into Canada. I do know personally of people who have taken advantage of that particular service, especially because it caters to those, especially who have a mobile lifestyle, but who want the security of a North American-based number. And so, you know, the soft phones, for example, I think are becoming more popular. And the voice over IP service is one that's cost effective, especially for businesses who are dealing with clients, especially outside of North America.
Because I did an interview just a few minutes ago with a spokesperson for UT Starcom, which has a new product called the F1000 handset, which allows people to essentially perform the functions of cellular telephony over Wi-Fi networks where there are open access Wi-Fi sources.
Right.
And I presumably that will be coming to Canada.
Yeah, a lot of those products get approvals if they do need approval, depending if they're, you know, what kind of device it is. You know, pretty rapidly, or at least comparably to the U.S. system. And as I was saying, the Canadian system is one that adopts new technologies very, very quickly. You know, part of it is just there is so much exchange going on between our two countries that it's just a really a cost of doing business issue. But you have a lot of high-tech sort of hubs within the Canadian economy as well, with places like Ottawa, Toronto, and Montreal. Mentioned Vancouver again. And there you're seeing a lot of that on collaboration software, and you're seeing people who are dealing in virtual teams across the globe now as corporations adjust their supply chains to take the best advantage of the skills that are out there. So, you know, the IT products necessary to support those are penetrating Canada as quickly as the market demands in that sense, and that's pretty quickly.
Okay, and now in the context of all that we've been talking about, what's the picture involving the transmission of video over broadband, wireless, fiber optic, DSL, cable, and the supplantation of cable providers by other providers who are offering a video on demand through broadband networks?
Well, that's a good point, and there you go into a couple of very interesting areas, because I think the short answer is Canadians want more video on demand, and they want better delivery mechanisms for that. So that's the market. The digital cable has become quite popular in Canada, but it's really only available in the large cities, and that's where the cable penetration drops off. On regular cable, it's very, very high, but digital is, of course, making its own inroads. But there is also a federal, sort of like your FCC, that regulates content on cable networks.
Right.
And so in terms of, video on demand, if you get that on your TV box or if you get that through another device, there is that aspect of it. And so
you mean it regulates in terms of platform or in terms of content?
More in terms of content. So in some senses that creates a, cable companies have to say you have a television station,
right?
And you say, I'd like to have that television station show on Canadian cable networks. There's a process to make that application and show it. It's one that's similar in many other parts of the world. The U.S. system is much more based on other issues, more to do with pure market forces. But in ours, it has to also do with space on our dial and the need to get the best possible programming that's available. But as the technology expands, the market choice that's available for consumers, what you're seeing is a rapid escalation in the types of content programming that's being made available to Canadians. And so you're seeing on the cable side that digital cable is rising quickly because of the technology on movies on demand. I don't know how that's affecting some of the upstarts on video on demand, but I do know that it's growing quickly on the digital cable side.
No, I know I could listen to Joni Mitchell and Neil Young all the time, but I'm wondering whether issues of Canadian content are a figure into this as well.
Well, what drives is a very good question. What drives some of those questions very much is that the Canadian system exists so that there is room for Canadian content to grow. And you like Joni Mitchell and Neil Young, and they are products of a tremendous talent system that's back in Canada, but one that requires encouragements for a lot of that to grow. And so you're seeing very much the creme de la creme of that. But it depends on a system ultimately of people being able to produce, to book, to hear, and to help create the market conditions necessary for that. It's really sort of in one sense a talent development model for the entire country.
And it also seems that as more capacity evolves, that you can have all the Canadian talent that the market will bear and still have room for other programming as well, and then it becomes a market issue of whether people want to listen or watch it.
Well, that point has been made by many in the field, and I think that right now there is a people are dealing with a lot of the transitional elements of the technology that is out there. But at the same time, companies are eager to create specifically Canadian content vehicles as well, in areas like satellite radio. If we're going to now start to talk to issues of wide-ranging consumer choice.
Right.
So I think in many ways what you're saying is absolutely true, but I also think that there is among many companies a desire to serve the Canadian market, and what exists on the Canadian side reflects a lot of consultations within the industry in Canada and among viewers in Canada, and so that what exists there represents that consensus to say, well, what we would like is to have the greatest possible tailoring of the world out there and the greatest possible so the tailoring of what we want for Canadian viewers and the greatest access to what people want from what is out there. So it is a balancing act like any government regulation. Absolutely.
Okay. Speaking of government regulation, could you focus on a comparison between the Canadian regulatory scheme and the American, and what differences you think those differences in regulation may have wrought on the broadband market in the two countries?
Well, we don't really like to comment too much upon the American system of regulation, except I did mention earlier that ours is more nationally based, and so we didn't quite have the same kind of regional baby bell system that that you folks had in the United States.
Right.
And the market did evolve differently after that, but what we have resulted, you know, proportionally economically, is roughly a similar situation, is that we have a couple of very large providers, and then a number of people who are small and have either found their niche or are growing in the market to compete. And so you have some smaller telephone companies that were, for example, only in Western Canada that now have a strong national presence, and people like their consumer choice. So on the regulatory side, I think in some cases it was a question of we all went from point A to point B, but the regulatory systems kind of took us in a little bit of different zigzags to get to those points. But essentially, what you've got now in Canada is a wide open long distance market, some local telephone regulation left on some of the services, emerging voice over internet protocol, and the wide range of other broadband and video and cable services that are out there.
Has NAFTA had any impact on cross national relationships or developments in broadband?
On that, I'd really only say incidental, and I'd say it in two ways. One, because NAFTA has reduced trade barriers, so that means there's been more corporate and manufacturing integration, which has in turn spawned its own telecommunications needs. And on the other side, NAFTA has made it easier for certain professionals to cross the border both ways in search of work. But in terms of and on some cases on making investments in each other's countries, there are certain protections that are afforded to countries in the NAFTA based on the same protections that companies get home companies get, national treatment as we call it. But otherwise, the impact of NAFTA has been more incidental, I think, on the telecommunications
industry. Okay, on a more general level then, what do you see in terms of an emerging unified North American broadband and telecom market? Is that something?
Explain to me what you mean by that.
Well, I'm not sure what I mean by that. American companies, more American companies providing broadband services in Canada, more Canadian content coming into the United States, and whether you see the erasure of the border through more broadband telecommunications and the development of the industry across the whole continent.
Very, very, very interesting point. I think it ultimately depends. I think that there's always going to be a slightly different answer on content than there is going to be on the technology.
Okay.
Because, again, you know, you look in the United States and Canada, both two large multi-ethnic societies. You know, one of the key differences in Canada, of course, is that we have a bilingual a country, and so we have a French language market and one that is served through national broadcasters, sort of like, you know, you have the BBC in Britain, well, we have the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in Canada. Both of those institutions are funded by the state. So on the content side, you're always going to see, I think, a very strong reflection of national identity. But I think on the technology side is really where you're going to see the integration coming up. And fundamentally, the question is, what is a media company? As you get into some of the really interesting applications in the gaming industry and you know, how advertising and gaming and content distribution is happening on those lines, and you know, mix that in with how people are you know, tuning into their televisions and you know, how we're consuming all of that content. I think you're getting into a very, very interesting area, but you know, you're always going to get higher hockey ratings in Canada than you're going to get in the United States. So in terms of a unified North American market, I think the content niches and the content sort of how that's reflected in each part of the three countries is going to remain fairly distinct, I think, for a fair chunk of time. But you have to remember too, in a lot of cases, like movies, for example, about 92% of the movies shown in Canada are U.S.-based movies. So in some cases, you do have a North American market. So like everything else, it depends how you know, where you decide to slice across the vertical.
Are most American television programs available in Canada?
Yeah. And in fact, absolutely.
With no time to when you're watching CSI Miami in L.A., you're watching it in
Toronto. You're watching the same thing. Well, what sometimes happens on cable networks is you'll have Canadian ads in the Canadian market and U.S. ads in the U.S. market, but the show is exactly the same.
So
Seinfeld, all those shows have like huge followings in Canada.
You mean Seinfeld is rerun on 10 different channels all the time?
Precisely. You can get Simpsons like if you want, like five times a day if you're a satellite subscriber.
So on the three levels, essentially, of technology, commerce, and content, you're saying that the technology is going to be the integrated, and that the content is going to remain to some extent country-specific, but also shared. And on the business side, do you think that the are there regulations in place that would prevent American giant telecoms from penetrating and taking market share away from Canadian companies?
Well, not market share, but there are ownership restrictions similar in a lot of ways to what exists in the United States under the FCC.
Right.
Right. So those types of ownership restrictions are also present in the Canadian market. And so on the ownership side, you know, that's another area where I don't see anything in the near future on what you were describing on that unified North American market. But in terms of market share and competing on that, in the absence of any other sort of regulations, you have it. I mean, the folks, you know, CBS is in Canada, CNN is in Canada, and they're all competing for market share and ad revenues.
Okay. I think we've the only level we've got left here is the global, so let me just touch on that a little bit. The people in Bollywood who produce more films than the people in Hollywood do are sort of launching a new offensive of trying to get their product out around the world.
Right.
What could you say about the role of Canada and broadband there in the global context, and how what we've been talking about between the United States and Canada is going to evolve in the whole world, the developed world, the underdeveloped world, and how a global market in those three levels we were talking about, the technology, the business side, and the content, what role do you see Canadian institutions playing in that process?
Sure. No, that's a big question.
It is.
But I'll take what chunks I can from
right.
that. I think we see the industry as a global market, first of all. And, you know, I think the great proof of concept of that is if you look at countries like India and China and anywhere in the developing world, the moment people start to make a little bit of money and they start to feel a little bit comfortable, where do they really want to spend a lot of their disposable income first? At the movies.
Right.
And people love movies. So we have viewed that as a global market. Bollywood is huge, and Hollywood is huge, and we got the best of both going on in Canada.
And of course, a good deal of Hollywood is being produced in Vancouver.
Well, there is a lot, and it goes up and it goes down.
Right.
You know, according to market conditions and all sorts of other things. There's,
right.
And there's competition within Canada as well for those spots, as there's competition in the United States. And you know, State X is offering, you know, to get film Y,
right.
And you know, and you're getting a lot of that, and you'll see that. I mean, New Zealand, you see that in Australia, you see that now all over the place. And so I think that global industry is there, and I look at it very much like what New York was, and what it becomes in terms of the financial services industry. I mean, for a long time, you could only do something in New York in the financial services side because the technology meant that you could only do it there.
Right.
But there would have been no point in New York sort of, you know, putting its arms around a thing and not letting anything else happen, because then it simply would have been bypassed, and it adapted and is still the world capital of the financial services industry, but it is a globalized industry that has a heavy corporate concentration in New York.
Right.
I think what you're seeing in the movie distribution business is precisely the same thing, that and you know, what Hollywood is always going to be Hollywood. It is not just a place. It's an idea. It's a set of
personal connections and relationships as well.
Well, exactly. And so, you know, I think the fact that people in India are watching more movies is a great thing, because that means the market is expanding that much more, and they're watching Indian films, but they're also watching films that are made in the United States, or made in the United States and Canada with a component made in England or in India. And I think global, you know, film production is going to have the same supply chain kind of issues as that market grows.
In the same way, a world car came about in the 80s, a world cinema, a world telecommunications content industry is being created in the same way now, with a little part here, and it could be edited in Europe and shot in Canada and viewed everywhere.
That's right, and you know, again, there you see, you know, the talent. I lived for a while in California, and I'm aware of the extraordinary talent that is there. And what you get, in fact, you know, what's interesting is, you know, there are a lot of Canadians and Americans and others who are working in Hollywood, and there's Americans working up in Vancouver and in Toronto and in other parts of the world. And so you're seeing that kind of, you know, the industry develop.
And in fact, I was listening to NPR yesterday about an American documentarian who went to India to
right.
make a film and ended up giving a lot of cameras to a lot of children.
Oh, really?
Who are starting to develop, and that's part of what's featured in the film. And among, I don't know, there'll be a Henry Carter Bresson among those kids.
Right.
But this now provides an opportunity for people anywhere in the world who have the talent to rise to the top of the global system.
Well, that's right.
By putting their product into it with much lower barriers to entry, and then being rewarded accordingly.
Well, that's right. In fact, that's the one area we didn't really talk about was how that is really affecting people at the individual level, and the whole weblog blogging phenomenon is pretty sophisticated in Canada as in the United States, and video blogging there's a lot of that going on up there.
All right. Maybe we'll talk about that more next time.
Yeah.
And maybe get some samples and show people what the Canadians are up to in content production.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for talking to us today on Broadband Wireless Access World. It's been very invigorating, and I hope we can talk about it some more in the future.
Glad I could do it.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.